Welcome to the Knights Party Roundtable Discussion, and I'm Thomas Robb.
And I'm Rachel Pendergraft.
And
we're at a round table today instead of a square one.
Well, okay. You know, I don't know if it's very round or not, but it looks more round than the square one, that's for sure. So anyway, we are well into the election cycle for 2016 now, and the Republicans are supposed to be all coalescing together and coming behind Donald Trump. And then, of course, the Democrats are still broken into fractions between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. And, of course, they say Sanders needs to just drop out of the race. But I think it's kind of funny. Even though I don't like Sanders, I get a kick out of them calling Sanders a socialist. And
because like, what's Hillary?
Yeah, like, what is Hillary? The difference is he's honest.
She's
about
the epitome of free enterprise.
Yeah, I mean, they always talk about, well, he's a socialist. Hillary Clinton, she's not. But they're really going for a socialist. Well, the Democratic Party has been socialist for a number of years, maybe even communistic. And so I find that kind of humorous that they want to talk about Bernie being a socialist versus Hillary Clinton. But nevertheless, they say that she's going to get the nomination. She says the other day in the interview that it's a done deal. I suppose it is. I don't know if it's going to make much difference, actually.
No. And what was it, the last, three or four years, it shows she'd taken in $30 million in speaking fees. Just totally outrageous. I don't know why she's even needing any of these other corporate, you know, funders for her campaign when she's raking in that kind of money.
Well, agreed, because you always want more.
$30 million.
Always want more. But anyway, then they say she might get indicted, which I kind of doubt that will happen. I think it will look too political if she was. So I doubt that she'll be indicted. And so the election will probably be between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. And, you know, sometimes, Rachel, that we come out and talk favorably about Donald Trump. And I've had some people accuse us of saying that, well, you're all in the bag for Donald Trump, and don't you know that Donald Trump is not the answer, and he's not going to save America.
Well, we're not naive.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing is, years ago, I was kind of the opinion, took position that it didn't make any difference in why vote. But I come to the conclusion that we have a responsibility to pursue righteousness as much as we can. We have no power who's going to be the Republican nominee or Democratic nominee. We have no power over that. But we do have power to pursue righteousness to the greatest degree that we can. And if Donald Trump is the, or somebody else perhaps, may not be the candidate we would want in an ideal world, but you still have to pursue righteousness as much as you can. And I guess you like it to somebody who maybe in a home invasion and somebody in your home and got some of your children kidnapped or so forth, and somebody coming to rescue them, you would take whoever gets the job done or who has the best chance of getting the job mm-hmm. done and not necessarily put them through a litmus test.
Yeah. Test, right.
See what all their different beliefs and so on. And then they say, well, Donald Trump is not a true conservative. He's going to turn. Maybe he, I don't know. We're not in the mind. We're not in his mind.
I only look at two things in regard to Donald Trump. One, is he willing to build a wall?
Right.
You know, because we're, you know, what does it matter if the American flag waves or Confederate flag waves or if there's a constitution or what does any of that matter if there's not any white people left?
Right.
And not that Donald Trump is, you know, on a big Calvary mission for white people, but he is willing to build a wall. And that wall, even just talking about the wall and then seeing the backlash and hatred of people who don't want it there, that puts a bit of tension out there that allows people, white people, to voice their opinion. It makes them a little more comfortable to talk about, you know, their feelings in regard to race and things like that. And so it just it helps open up some talking points. But I mean, if he's willing to build a wall, I mean that's Nero.
Why would I be against it?
Yeah, why would you be, you know, why would you be against it? I know someone wrote here, we had put something out just about, you know, the fact that, you know, not as the organization, because we're not endorsing anyone officially, but, you know, a lot of us, you know, privately, you know, are endorsing Donald Trump. And this individual is very irate because, again, he's not a true conservative. He's not for the Constitution and so forth. And, you know, after, you know, very calmly explaining to him the issue, how this reflects upon our race and how this is going to play out as far as, you know, making these other countries pay, raising the tariffs, bringing some jobs back, just the whole racial aspect. He said, well, this is more about race. This is about the Constitution. You know? And I was like, what?
Yeah.
It's just,
why did he bother writing you?
It was just like mind-boggling.
Yeah.
You know? The Constitution's great, but who cares about the Constitution if there's not any white people?
Yeah.
I mean, your blood is the most important thing. Yeah. When it just boils down to that, your blood, that's it, you know?
Right.
And then, you know, I mean, you can't even go to church, worship Jesus Christ, or become a Christian if you're not white, if there's no blood. I mean, it's just a mute issue.
Well, of course, people are going to say, you're going to point to black people on TV and say those people are Christians. And, you know, and that brings up a whole new discussion on defining Christianity. And I know the argument of, well, they've been born again and so forth.
Yeah, obey the Ten Commandments. Everybody will have a better life if they do that, you know.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is, though, is, you know, I care about white people. You care about white people.
Well, Jesus Christ did.
Christ
said he came to redeem his people from their sins.
You know,
and he made it very selective.
And so
yeah.
So if Donald Trump's willing to build the wall, then okay.
And if he keeps keep a few Arabs out of the country, that'd be that's good too.
You know.
So, but like you say, it raises the narrative. Bring these talking points up. It makes our position more. Appear to be more accepted.
And it is becoming more accepted. It is becoming more accepted.
Right. And it's always been there, but there's never been a voice for it because of the politicians running for office have to bow and scrape to the donors, and so they are never able to bring up issues of real importance to America. And now that there is somebody, and that's why he's getting the support he's getting.
Right, right. Well, it is, I think it's very important, what he's doing. It's very important that he's creating a sounding board for people to be able to, you know, reflect upon their ideas and reflect upon those ideas that they've had that they've just had to keep buried down. And now they feel like they've kind of got an outlet.
Yeah, if Donald Trump can talk about it, they can talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you don't have to have no shame about it. And I get a kick out again about the Muslim deal. People, you know, you can't stop the Muslims coming in here. Yes, you can. What do you mean you can't do it? I heard something the other day, and this jumped into another issue right off, I know, but Donald Trump said that when he's elected, and again, we don't know what he'll do,
right.
But we know what Hillary will do.
Right.
So if Donald Trump betrays us, okay, he betrays us, but we can't control that. But we already know Hillary's going to do it.
Right.
So, you know, you throw a dice at Donald. And he made a comment that the Second Amendment will restore to people that write their own guns throughout the whole country.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll give an executive order on that. And then some professors from some university, supposed to be a professor on the Bill of Rights, says executive order can't do that. That has to go through the Congress. You know, he cannot just sign. It shows how naive Donald Trump is. You cannot sign an executive order guarantees gun rights to the American citizen without going through Congress. And I'm thinking, you're a professor? It's already been through Congress. It's 1776 or 1787. It's already been made a law. The rights of the people will not be infringed, period. And so What do you mean Donald Trump can't get an executive order on that? Certainly he can't.
Absolutely. And look how many executive orders Obama's put through. Transgender bathrooms in all the public schools and you know, $5,000 per little illegal alien kid that's come across the border, just handing out cash to them to help them, you know, have a good start in their life. And they just executive order themselves to death constantly. But if it's something that's in support of just good old-fashioned Americanism, then they get their feathers all ruffled up and want to drag it through the court system. And but like you say, that's been done and decided years ago.
Yeah. And, you know, when you get into legal stuff, like everybody gives their opinion and so on. But Donald Trump's talked about deporting illegal aliens. And even Bill O'Reilly is pretty conservative. So you can't do that. You can't do that. And he said, well, yes, you can. He said, you can't do that. He said, because the courts rule that everybody has a right to a appearance before the court through litigation, you know, whether they're citizens or not. And I think that's true if a Mexican who's not a citizen lives in this country and commits a crime, he has a right to a trial by jury, I would say. You know? Mm-hmm. And not just throw it in the jail. Okay, he has a right for a trial. And not just instant conviction. I'm talking about a citizen, not an illegal alien. Somebody who's not a citizen. Somebody who's over here visiting this country on a visitor's pass. He's not a citizen. He's still protected by the law. You can't just round him up, throw him in prison because you're suspicious of a crime. He's still entitled to litigation for the court. But illegal aliens, they are not under the jurisdiction. They have not volunteered to come under the jurisdiction of the courts. They are here illegally. And Donald Trump is not suggesting to put them in jail, although I think that would probably be a good alternative.
No, he's saying remove them from the country.
And they say, well, it's going to break up families. Only if the family don't want them, go with them.
Right.
You know, it's not going to break up any families. If a mom and dad gets deported and their 15-year-old daughter doesn't want to go,
then
she's choosing to be broken up.
Right, right.
And then, but even if that's the case, since when are children allowed to benefit from the illegal acts of their parents?
Right.
If John Smith commits a bank robbery and robs a bank and gets $30 million, and he's putting his son through college, and he's putting his daughter through college, and buying expensive gifts, and setting up businesses for his children, and just spending the money, and he gets arrested, say, after 15 years, do they come back and say, all right, well, the children should not be punished, so we're going to put him in jail, but y'all get to keep the money?
Right.
No, it don't work that way.
No. No, absolutely not.
I do think that illegal aliens should be in prison, personally. Maybe initially give them an opportunity to leave, give them 6 months to leave on their own free will, and then after that point, when all the volunteer people have left voluntarily, then you can enact the prison system that any more that comes into the country illegally will be placed in prison. Because it has to be consequences.
Mm-hmm.
It would be like somebody who robs a bank and he attempts a bank robbery and they catch him at the door or catch him and he's trying to run out the door with the money. Ah, ha, ha, you didn't get away. All right. And take the money back. Go back outside. You know. And leave him outside. You know, there has to be consequences. So you come try to rob a bank. You get arrested and you go to jail. You try to break into the country, you get arrested, and you go to jail. You don't just get placed outside on the street again, outside the bank, or you don't get just placed outside on the southern border of the country, given an opportunity to invade again.
Well, right, and at some point, you know, at some point after those people were deported, or if there's some sort of system set into place, then those people that continue to try to break into this country, they've got to be defined as foreign combatants. And
in prison.
Yeah, and in prison.
Sentence of Guantanamo.
Or whatever. You know, they are trying to invade this country. And no different than if there's if they were wearing a uniform of a foreign army trying to invade this country. Because that's what they are trying to do. They're not doing it under the guise of a uniform, but they are doing it under their nationality. They believe this should be their country, and they want to take it over. It's no different than if they were coming over in tanks and parading across the border as part of an army. They're an army of civilians, and they have one goal and one agenda, and that's to take over this country and make it their country.
Yeah, that's why they keep flying the Mexican flag. Because they're buying, you know, when explorers come to this country or throughout history, one of the first things that a conqueror does when he conquers a fort, conquers a land, he raises the banner of their country, he raises their flag.
Major stake.
That's right. And that's what they're doing. They come across this border, there are all these large demonstrations and so forth. They're waving the Mexican flag because they're saying, we are conquering. This is ours. This is our land. We're staking our flag and we're conquering this land. So there's no doubt that illegal aliens coming to this country should be deported. Donald Trump is getting a lot of support for that. There's no question that if they are come back again after being deported, they should be imprisoned. Absolutely, and treat it as any other criminal.
Well, the Muslims do the same thing. When they come over and they build a mosque, or they start one of their, you know, it doesn't always necessarily look like a mosque, but it's their cultural centers, their mosque, their place. I mean, that's what they're doing. They're making their stake in a neighborhood, and then they spread out from there.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely what they're doing. The non-white world is gathered together to basically annihilate white people. They want what the white people have built. They want Western Christian civilization to end, and they want our resources, and they want our technology, and they want what we have built. And then they want to get rid of us. They want to come and take what we have and then get rid of us.
Yeah. Yeah, well, of course, and that's going on all over Europe, going on in this country. Mayor of London recently was elected a Muslim mayor of the capital of Great Britain. What would you think the Crusaders would think? Have a Muslim being the mayor or the head political officer of London. They would have been find it unbelievable, and yet it has happened. And I know people say, well, not all Muslims are that way. Not all Muslims are terrorists. Islam is a peaceful religion, and we hear that all the time. And yet the terrorism continues to increase. And while all Muslims may not be terrorists, in that
they don't have what it takes to stand up against right. the terrorists.
Yeah, in that they're not actually committing terrorism.
Yeah.
The point is, I think we could put as a reasonable argument that they still support the terrorists because they all want Sharia law.
Mm-hmm.
And because they want Sharia law, that makes it what? That makes it wanting to undermine our Christian law in this country. Destroy this republic and establish a different political system. And they may want to do it peacefully in that they themselves are not engaged, but they certainly support those who are. And we find talk about the same thing regarding Martin Luther King. I hear people, conservatives, say, you know, like with the riots were happy in Ferguson, oh, Martin Luther King would be so ashamed of this. Oh, there's no... Martin Luther King was quite supportive of that. That's what he worked for. Now, he may have done it in a peaceful way because he knew that he could undermine our resolve much easier by the presentation of being a man of peace and brotherhood.
Mm-hmm.
But he still had one objective, and that was destroying the white power structure in America, the white Christian power structure in America. And so while some may do it more violently, some may do it under the guise of peace and brotherhood. The point is they all are still pushing and promoting the same objective of this, the destruction of the white Christian power structure or white Western civilization.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I know Jason's talked quite a bit when he's been here about the seeding of America with people from Syria and other parts of the Middle East and Asia and so forth. And the seeding, the populating of America with these basically foreign dissidents into rural areas in America, and being done for the most part by non-government organizations that are they're religious Christian organizations,
right?
Who
they think they're
basically
missionary. Yeah, they think it's their Christian duty.
Basically, get a payment, you know, per head that they're able to relocate here to the United States, and exactly thinking somehow that it's their Christian duty because, well, instead of having to send missionaries to the world, God's bringing the world to us. And it's so satanic, so unchristian to think that these people really want American Christians to think that somehow we're going to benefit and we're going to bring these people here and we're going to change them and we're going to change their culture and we're going to change their beliefs and then we're just going to all raise the flag together and worship together. It's absolutely not what's happening. They are coming and they are changing our people and changing our country and our laws and our religion. It's a pluralistic society. And these, you know, these Christian organizations, well, they're not Christian. They're rooted in Satanism, you know.
They're rooted in Judaism, but they're rooted in.
Absolutely.
And the thing is, they are also the same ones that are behind all your international adoptions.
Right.
Those small communities, like even Harrison here, you know, every year or so they have an adoption carnival. What do they call it? Adoption fair. Or whatever. And you go there and you have people there, counselors help you. If you want to adopt, see if you qualify and see who you can adopt and what kind of children you might want to adopt. And they show pictures of all these wonderful children that all need to be adoption from Ecuador or from South America or from Taiwan or Kenya or something like that. I've never been to one. It might be interesting to go sometime, but I suspect they probably even have a few examples of children, like on an auction block in a sense, you know, that you can see, you know, maybe some little children travel with them and you get to see some of these little children, how you can help them out by just adopting this little child into your home. And that destroys that whole family because suddenly you've got diversity right in your midst, and then go enter right into the churches that the children go to, and that undermines that's why Christianity is changing. People look at it and say, you know, what's going on here? You know, what's happened to our country that over the past 50, 60 years? Well, what's happened to the country, the root of it isn't in the government. The root of our problems in the churches. Christianity has created a spiritual void. And the spiritual void is bringing destruction upon America. And the spiritual void begins when you reject the very children of God, his people, the children of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Sometimes the Bible calls the children of the covenant, the white race. And when you reject those people, God's people, and interject aliens, racial aliens, into the midst, you bring in this destruction upon our community. And that's why we see our communities and our nation being undermined today as more and more of this tolerance and acceptance of this alien world, this invasion coming across, not just into the homes, like through the international adoptions, but then coming through our borders. We have a massive non-white invasion taking place in this country. White people be a minority in this country in, 15, 20 years. And spiritually, culturally, and morally, we already are a minority. And there's a blame for this. And everybody wants to point their fingers at the government and say, the government is doing this. The Democrats are doing it. sometimes they'll point fingers at some of the Republicans. They're the ones that are doing it. But the political parties, the politicians, you know, they only do what they feel they can get away with. Mm-hmm. And if they are, if we're in a nation that has become tolerant to observing and watching our own race be destroyed through this massive invasion, that is the where the blame lies. It doesn't lie in the government. The blame lies in the churches of America, who no longer understand their responsibility. And like we pointed out in the past, people today, most people, look upon the church as being God's a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
We hear all the time, the church is a hospital. And I can understand the concept. I'm not necessarily disagreeing with it entirely, because Christianity does aid and help people's lives. So I understand that. But primarily the church, we look upon it as the army of the living God, the army of God, you know, establishing righteousness in the land.
That's certainly how the Crusaders, when they fought the Muslim hordes coming in, attempting to take over Europe, that's certainly how they viewed it.
Well, certainly, and that's why
Charles Martel saved Europe from the Muslims. That's how he viewed it.
Absolutely. You know, so the Christianity, you know, and you could go back to in the Old Testament too, Rachel. You know, with the patriarchs and Gideon and so on.
Yeah.
But the church for years understood that it had a responsibility to maintain Christian deportment and conduct in their community. They understood that, and they understood that need or responsibility to maintain a Christian environment in their communities, then extended on into local government, extended on to state government, and eventually extended on to the national government. So the Christian people understood that they had a responsibility to maintain a Christian environment, not just in their homes, in the communities, but in their national government.
Yeah, that was all, it's like the church is the root, and the branches of government all stem out of that. And you got a Christian root, then you got a Christian tree.
Well, right. And so today we find, again, to repeat myself, even good so-called conservatives on TV want to blame the government. They want to blame Bill Clinton, or they want to blame Barack Obama, they want to blame some Supreme Court decisions. And we look at those things, and they are what, you know, maybe teetered in one direction, you know, that we find very disheartening. But it's only because this vacuum, this wholesome, righteous, spiritual vacuum is void in the country. And when it has become void, then these evil is allowed to exist. Evil has no strength. I mean, when they talk that way, in a sense, they're violating the First Commandment. Because what they're saying is that evil is so powerful in this country that we as Christians cannot overcome it. We can't do anything about it. And without realizing, evil has only become powerful because the church has first weakened itself. And when the church weakens itself, then evil is allowed to grow and exist. And this is why we look at this verse in 2 Chronicles 7:14, and we find this verse so often quoted by churches, conservatives, and so on. And you're familiar with it. Most people listening here are probably familiar with it. But it says, if my people, which are called by my name, will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from the wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and heal their land. And so they take this verse, 2 Chronicles 7:14, and they call upon the nation, and they look at the government, and so forth, and they say, you know, they want to carry that to the steps of Congress, so to speak, and so on. But, you know, the verse is not for the government to repent. The verse tells the people to repent. It's not telling the government to repent, but the people to repent. And it's just particular people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not just any people. It says, if my people. And people say, well, those are Christians. Well, no, that's 2 Chronicles 7:14 was long before the birth of Jesus Christ. So when it says my people, talk about a very specific people. And the specific people are those people who are the what we mentioned earlier, the Children of the Covenant, which, well, we're not going to too much go into now, but, you know, which is really the white race. The white race are the Children of the Covenant, the children of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so when it says, my people, essentially what it's saying is that the white race will repent and turn from the wicked ways. I'll forgive their sin and heal their land.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting. You know, you look back at, you know, our founding ancestors in this country and different Pilgrim and Puritan communities and so forth. And whenever, whenever there was something, you know, really bad that was happening, maybe it was Indian attacks, maybe it was outbreaks of diseases, maybe it was impending, maybe a trouble with Great Britain and so forth. But, you know, things that really were going to affect their community in a negative. You know, the first thing that they would always do, you know, the preachers and the community leaders, you know, they'd have days of prayer and fasting, and they would all, you know, as a community, as a whole, and families and everything, they would stop and they would, you know, they wouldn't look outward as to, you know, why are you attacking this? Why is this? Why? They'd look inward. What is it that we have done? What is it? What sin are we allowing in our communities? What sin are we allowing in the church that has cast disfavor on us as a consequence of that? You know, and that's, you know, what our people have to do today. They, you know, our people have to, like you said, you know, not necessarily look at the government. I mean, yeah, the government's not doing a real good job. They're betraying the people, you know, but it's the people betraying themselves who have to look inward at themselves and their own families and their own communities and their own churches. You know, what is it that our people are doing that has caused God to pass judgment on us? It's because we don't care about, we've betrayed our blood. We've betrayed our posterity and we've betrayed our ancestors. And, you know, as a people as a whole, you know, betrayed those, you know, the two pillars that you mentioned, our birthright, which, you know, our race and our gender. And that's what our people have done. They're betraying those things. And even if people per se themselves or their communities, they say, well, that, you know, our family's never been like that, or our community, well, but they've allowed things like that to continue without voicing any objection. And
people, not only not a voice of objection, they're all encouraging it with all the international adoptions and
well, I'm saying just particularly in like families,
right?
Families who are against that stuff, who don't like what's going on, but they don't voice any objection themselves.
Well, like this person you referred to a little earlier, when he says not about race, about the Constitution, he's placing a government. And we love the Constitution, the Founding Fathers, all the documents of our founding documents. But the point is, it's not about the government, it's about the people. It's about people. That's what it's about God's people. And he's placing a government entity in a higher position of desire than our own race.
Right.
And that's what has happened so much of people. We see throughout the country today. They place America, and I hope people understand this. If I'm saying it wrong, Rachel, help correct me, but they're placing America as a higher desire than their own race. And when I say America, you know, I'm talking about like the government, and certainly America, where we view it.
They're putting it on a pedestal rather than their
they're putting the Constitution on a pedestal rather than their
race.
Right.
And the Constitution is just a outpouring of our race.
Right. If you want to save the Constitution and free enterprise, and you want to save self government, and you want to save liberty, then you save the people who created those things. But if you take away and destroy the people who created those things, then the world enters into the dark ages forever, because race mixing is forever. You can take away and destroy a person's liberty, and he can fight and regain it again. But if you destroy his blood, destroy his racial integrity, his racial heritage, it's gone forever. You can never come back from it.
Right. Well, you know, that's what makes me, and I know we don't have a lot of time left, but I was over at the office and the grounds of the center and stuff this morning, just checking a few things and seeing how the building and so forth is coming of the Christian Revival Research Center and so forth. They've been doing the block work and everything, and there were some people that were up here a couple of days ago from Mississippi, stopped by the office. They were up on vacation, stopped by the office, and they were really, really impressed with everything that was going on here, and they didn't know about this new, you know, building that we were doing, a building project and everything, and so they were, you know, kind of asked what it was about. They went up there and saw the big sign and everything, and we were kind of, you know, talking about Christian Revival and, you know, is there any hope and so forth, and they were, you know, I'm trying to explain to them about, you know, this building and having classrooms and media center and library and this, you know, this hall of artifacts and memorabilia to help, you know, rekindle a love for our racialist heroes in this country who's fought for the white struggle and so forth. And they were really, when they left, they were really excited. They're like, wow, you know, it's, you know, they come up from, I don't remember what part of Mississippi they're in. I know there's it's not, in your northern states, your non-whites are mostly segregated into the cities, but unfortunately through the south, they're just everywhere. And so they're quite pleased to be up in this area. It's, you know, pretty white area and so forth, but they're really excited about hearing about the building project and, you know, training young men and women to, you know, be spokesmen and be, you know, be able to go back to their communities with an education of Constitution and good sound biblical concepts and so forth, and the tools to speak for our people. And, you know, when you're talking about our people being a minority in this country, you know, a few minutes ago, Dad, you know, so many people, they just, you know, they look at Donald Trump and they think, well, this is just kind of like the last hurrah. This is just maybe the last chance we have. And if he doesn't win, it's all downhill from here. And, you know, some people think, well, even if he does win, it's all downhill from here. And there's, you know, all these Muslims coming in and everything. And, you know, like you've mentioned so many times in your sermon, you know, God can save by many and God can save by few. And it's just, you know, it's so, to me, it's so encouraging to know that here in the heartland that, you know, for years we've had this generational vision that's coming into being in reality with so many people across the country that are getting behind and supporting this effort of creating something to really educate and train leaders for a future. Because, you know, like you say, the national government, federal government is not sustainable, and there is going to be a void in leadership. There is going to be a void in power. There's going to be a void in law and order. And it's not just something that, you know, some sort of idea that we concocted yesterday. It's a generational vision that is coming into reality with the help and support of people all across the country. And to me, it's just really exciting. And they were really excited about it, just to hear about, you know, a place that's not just focusing on the here and now, but is actually focusing on the future, you know, on working with young people, training people, understanding that communities will need leadership and communities, you know, need to be able to be built around good, strong, white Christian families and just, you know, it's evangelism to our own people of what we're working on here. And they were just really excited about it. And I was just over there this morning looking at how the building was coming along and so forth. And I just wanted to, you know, mention here when we had the show that, you know, how we just people really need to, you know, get behind this project. It's so, so important. People have got to get behind this project and financially support it and send in their tithes and send in their donations and get this started, because people can sit and bitch and they can moan and they can groan and they can complain all day long about what's happening, and they can talk about how desperate the situation is for white people. Yeah.
And they all say, we got to do something.
Yeah, we got to do something. And, you know,
when you offer an opportunity to do something, they put their hands back in the pocket.
Right, absolutely.
I got to do something?
Right, absolutely. And, you know, it reminds me of, you know, that story in the New Testament about the widow, you know, who just, she just had a, I forget, I think they called it a mite or something, mm-hmm. but just had a little bit that she could give, but she gave everything that she had to give. And God blessed her for it. And yet, you know, there's so many people, and we do have a lot of really good, fine men and women that really get behind and support things. But I know for a fact that there's a lot more that a lot of people could do to help this. And, you know, we're not just creating something here for North Arkansas or for Harrison or for this little area. This is going to be the seat of white Christian evangelism for our people. And we want to do what we can to send out missionaries to our people and leaders and people that are trained in Constitution and leadership and history and Bible and working with communities and building communities. This is where it's starting. This is where it's happening. This is where it's coming from.
Yes, and if anybody listening and want to come by and visit, they're more than welcome.
Sure.
And they can physically see what's being done. This is not just talk on the internet. They can physically see what's being done on a daily basis here and the growth and the potential that is opening up for us. And I want to caution, however, that I know there's an element of people who are thinking, well, Donald Trump is a shoo-in for election, and that's going to save America. He's going to put up the border, he's going to do this, going to do that, and dismantle all the harm that Obama's done and so on. He's going to save. But they fail to realize that even if Donald Trump gets elected this time, you know, the demographics are growing. They're right. Growing. And the demographics, the racial demographics in 4 years and 8 years from now are not going to be the same as they are today.
They're not going to support a Donald Trump.
No. Even now you can tell that all the non-whites, not all literally, but vast majority of non-whites support the Democratic agenda. So it's just a matter of numbers, and the numbers are not favorable to longevity of a Donald Trump phenomena. Unless there's a real heartfelt turnaround occurring within the country that we're promoting here at the center. And so 4 years from now, 8 years from now, how many of these baby boomers still going to be around? How many people going to be, how many more, you look at these 14, 15-year-old kids, Mexican kids, black kids, kids from Asia running around here now on the streets on skateboards. In 4 years, 8 years from now, they're voters. And they're going to vote against your best interest, and so this is not going away. Come November 8, 2016, this issue is not going away. It's going to grow and it's going to intensify over the next 4 to 8 years. Now we have been saying too that come November 8, on Election Day, America's going to change. There's going to be a change taking place in this country on that day. Either Hillary Clinton's going to be elected, and America can plunge further down into the sinkhole, the dark hole, or if Donald Trump gets elected, these people, these Mexicans, they're not going to walk away silently into the night. They're going to fight back.
They're going to be outraged.
They're going to fight back, and they're going to resist. Police officers in the country are going to be in increasing danger. White people are going to be in increasing danger because there's a growing hatred. So if you think Donald Trump gets elected, then all of his opposition is just going to peacefully say, okay, Trump won, that's how the election went, got to go by the law of the land, that's how the election went, so we'll get a better shot next time. No, they're going to resist. We see the resistance already. They're going to continue the resistance. They're going to continue with anger and hatred against white people. So there is an opportunity coming for us over the next couple of couple of years as this resistance against white people grows, as white people become awakened to what's happened. You know, I have sometimes people tell me, Rachel, that, well, as a minister, I should be out preaching the gospel. You know, teaching, leading souls to Christ. I have people tell me that off and on over the years. And yet, they don't understand that's exactly what we're doing. We are seeing a nation, a people, that are being deceived and being led into the one world church. They're being the one world church of miscegenation, sodomy. I wrote a book on it called The Last Church, which is available. If somebody want to write to us, request a copy of The Last Church. And you tell the best way to do that here in a minute, Rachel. And the way we view it is we're taking a message to our people, our race, our heritage, our culture, who we believe to be the covenant people of God. And we're proclaiming a message, what we view to be deliverance, and warning that this one world church is massively deceptive. And it looks beautiful from the outside, but it's deceptive and it's destruction. And it leads people into the one world church and into the gates of hell. And so we feel we are taking the gospel to these people, to our people, and say, you don't have to be a victim of the one world church. You don't have to be somebody who has been suckered into hatred of your own people, your own heritage, your own gender. But you can come out of them. That's what the Bible says, come out of them, my people. And that's why we're taking the message of what we consider salvation to our people.
Well, absolutely. And that's, you know, and so that, like you say, you know, people want to stop by here and see what's going on and so forth. But that's what, you know, makes this, you know, research school, the center, so integral to everything that we're doing in the future. And, you know, a lot of the people that support Donald Trump right now, it's helping us to be able to relate better to people. It's helping people to be able to talk about issues that they haven't been able to talk about before. But there still are, you know, a large majority of people that I would say are Trump supporters. A lot of it, their support is still out of just plain economic concern, without perhaps a racial basis to it. They still haven't quite come to grips with the fact that, you know, their race is under attack, and they have to turn back and have love and compassion for their white brothers and sisters. A lot of it is looking at, you know, because Donald Trump's really big on, you know, stopping these, you know, these foreign countries from taking advantage of America and American workers and this and that and American first and everything, which is all good, and that's a good starting point. But, you know, people have to, you know, they've got to look past that economic aspect and look down to just the nitty gritty kernel of truth, is it's their people that they've got to start caring about. And, you know, that's our message here. Like you say, our message here, it's evangelism to our people.
Yeah. Well, we sum it up with love your God and love your people.
Absolutely.
You know, and I had somebody post on Facebook the other day that said, well, you say you love your people, but I love all people. You know, and, oh, that sounds so fluffy. Mm-hmm. You know, I love all people. But in a sense, when we say love our people, it will benefit all people.
Right.
Our message, love for our people, does benefit all people. You look at the people in the blacks in Detroit. 50 years ago, when I lived there, they were safe. Black young kids were safe. They didn't worry about drive-by. They didn't worry about drugs in the community. They didn't worry about some young black girl. They didn't worry about being raped in a darkened hallway. Their communities were strong and safe. The black families were strong. Most black families were intact. Those black communities in Detroit and other areas were very strong 50 years ago. And when we took away love for our people, and took away our ability to govern ourselves and govern our nation under Christian principles, what has happened? Those black communities now are become dangerous. They become hateful. The families are broken up. Young black children live in despair and in drugs. and fear and in the shadows of crime, whether it be Detroit or Chicago or any other large cities. And so we have not brought a blessing upon these people at all. If you want to bring a blessing upon all people, then you first by bringing a blessing upon our people. And when we bring a blessing upon our people and loving our people and understanding and embracing our responsibility before God, then all people of the earth will be blessed accordingly.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, when people understand the white race as being God's covenant people, then, when God told Abraham that, I will bless those that bless you and curse those that curse you, well, that's the bottom line right there. You know? People want to have blessings, then they need to bless the people of God, and that's the white race.
Yeah.
But as far as your book, The Last Church, people can write to Post Office Box. There's a couple different addresses. Post Office Box 602, Harrison, Arkansas 72601. Or they can also the Knights. That's through the church. The Knights Party also carries the book. Post Office Box 2222, Harrison, Arkansas 72601, or they can email us at nationaloffice@theknightsparty.com.
I guarantee you, Rachel, that they just write to Tom Robb, Harrison, Arkansas.
We'll go right.
We'll still get it.
Absolutely.
So forget the ad. The box.
Happens all the time.
Yeah, just write Thomas Robb, Harrison, Arkansas. Most likely, it depends on what the clerk is and so forth, but most likely it'll still come through.
Absolutely. But yeah, that's a really, really excellent book. I've never seen another book like it, and I really would recommend people, because so many people, they look at the One World Church and they really have no understanding of what that is, what its deception is.
They look upon something evil, satanic, and
how those people are caught up in it, or they look at it as like it's the Catholic Church or this some denomination or something. They have literally no idea the concept of the One World Church and how it actually plays into the destruction of our people.
Yeah, because they're looking for, like you said, they're looking for some One World Church being some organization or some address somewhere. Or
some antichrist is the head of it or something.
Yeah, or some Eastern religion and so forth. Without really, the One World Church is among us everywhere.
Absolutely.
And it's not a church in the fact of the structure as much as it's an ideology. It's an ideology that has captured the Christian church over the past 35, 40 years. And so
write or call or email us and get that book, and then want to remind people about the National Planning Congress coming up on Labor Day weekend. I don't exactly remember what the dates are.
September 2, 3, and 4, okay. Called the Klan Leadership and Family Conference Retreat. We have a beautiful retreat up here. You bring your families, a playground, a place to relax. People can really kind of unwind and just feel safe suddenly, you know.
Right.
Depending on where you're coming from, of course. But we have people all the time come here from some large city and some place, and they come here and they just feel so rejuvenated and renewed.
Or even if they're coming from the deep south where there's not really a racial disparity between the city and the rural areas. Blacks are everywhere, and crime is everywhere. So even though they could be coming from some little town in Alabama that's just littered with blacks and crime and come up here and be like, it's white.
So we have a beautiful retreat up here. We have 100 acres of property, about 10, 15 groomed acres, 20 acres maybe.
Nice playground, dorm room for men and women.
Beautiful church.
Yeah, just a lot of nice stuff. I would describe it as a retreat.
And we're in a community that is very
favorable.
Very favorable. There's a few loudmouth people that have elevated themselves into community, in their mind, community, representing the community, like the Diversity Council and Chamber of Commerce. But most people in the city are not like that.
Yeah, they
most people are very loving, caring people. There's a few hateful people that get on TV and talk about how, you know, we had to diversify Harrison and so on. But most people in this community are very are good, caring, loving people who embrace us. They're not necessarily coming out here to our meetings and so forth, but they embrace us. We feel it every day in town among the people we shop among and so on. So, and not just myself, it's just our whole family and so on are very welcome and received. Yeah, so it's a nice community.
Yeah, so that's September 2, 3, and 4?
Correct. Friday night, all day Saturday, all day Sunday with cross lighting, Saturday evening. And so...
And we've got a full summer of interviews that we're lining up with the...
And so some may not come up, but we're in talking with people from HBO, talking with people from MTV.
We've got some...
Associated Press, the story's supposed to be coming out
got a
shortly.
France, people from France coming out in June. Some people from Brazil who's doing a deal about Trump and the rise of white nationalism among the white minority in Brazil.
And we really try, we really work to present ourselves in a positive... positive representatives of this cause that we love so dearly. And I think that if people haven't seen yet the CNN's story called United Shades of America, they'll kind of get a little bit of a grasp of who we are, how we handle ourselves, and the kind of prestige we have in the community. I mean, it was funny when the Chamber of Commerce gal, who really opposes us 100%, the worst thing she could say about me was, he's a nice guy. And if I had a flat tire, he'd probably stop helping me on the side of the road. That was pretty funny. Anyway, it was a good, CNN did a good show, United Shades of America. Somebody might want to check it out. It's on YouTube. But we're closing up here to time now, Rachel. So just keep, remember, September 2, 3, and 4 is our National Plan Party Leadership and Family
Don't
Conference.
Don't forget your monthly pledges and your dues, people. We need to get those in. We've got expenses, we got projects, outreach programs. People's got to do their part and get their monthly dues sent in.
Absolutely. We could not exist in with our programs, the evangelistic efforts, without the support of good, faithful people like yourselves. So don't underestimate the power you have in just a few dollars. And of course, if you're somebody who has a talent of making large amounts of money, then consider the Knights Party as a worthy a recipient of your tithe and contribution. And then also we want to mention, coming up in October, the fourth Saturday of October, will be our European American Heritage Festival in Pulaski, Tennessee.
Absolutely. It's got a busy summer and busy fall already lining up.
So, in the meantime, this Thomas Robb is going to sign off now. And Rachel Pendergraph is signing off. Waving.
I'm waving to you.
Jason was not here today, but he'll be back next week, I suspect. And until next time, we're just reminding you all to love each other, love your God, and love your people.